welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, October 27th, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Robin Brown joins editor Nick Seabrook to talk about his activist work with the 613-819 Black Hub and his work addressing anti-Black racism. Robin Brown is an activist and communications professional based in Ottawa, Ontario. He is also the founder of the 613-819 Black Hub and Rabble.ca's Off the Hill co-host, alongside Libby Davies. His blog is called The True North. Read more from Robin Brown and catch up on Off the Hill on Rabble.ca today. Here are Robin Brown and Nick Seabrook in conversation. Take a listen.
All right. Hi, Robin. Thank you very much for joining us. Robin, of course, you're a longtime host of our Off the Hill panel here at Rabble.ca, but also you've been an activist for many years in the Ottawa area, involved in issues around police and other issues of government accountability. And that's what we'll be discussing here today. Thank you so much for joining me, Robin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First, to start, let's get a little bit information about your history, Robin. When did you start getting involved in, community advocacy and organizing and things of that nature?
Well, Nick, it's way back in the day, man. I actually started my activism fighting against apartheid in South Africa in the late 80s when I was a student at Concordia University. So we were then focusing on, or the campaign against apartheid had gotten to the point where people were focusing on divestment, right? Getting organizations to divest the money that they had been investing in the in South Africa. So Concordia University had money invested. So we were focused on that, right? So that was way back then. And I kind of continued on, got into the federal government, and then but also still was doing activism, but really after having quite a long career in the government where I was doing, community activism, but not like full time, so to speak, December of 2017, while a federal public servant, myself and a friend of mine, Richard Sharp, co-founded the Federal Black Employees Caucus and the 613-819 Black Hub. So the caucus was focusing on systemic anti-Black racism inside the federal public service, and the 613-819 Black Hub was focusing on systemic anti-Black racism in the community at large. So, it's through the hub, what we call it, that I've been doing a lot of the policing work.
And tell me a little bit about that policing work. I understand for quite some time you've made monthly presentations to the Ottawa Police Services Board, which is, the municipal body that governs the Ottawa Police Service. Can you tell me a little bit about the nature of those presentations and what your goals are in frequently engaging with the Ottawa Police Services Board?
Yeah, I mean, the large overall objective is to move money away from policing and into things that actually keep us all safer, right? And then when I say that, then there is like ample evidence that not only does policing not keep us safer, it actually does the reverse. And for two really, really clear reasons. One is putting more money into police means more police, and the police actually cause harm. Their own stats here in Ottawa and in other places show, for example, they use force disproportionately on Black, Indigenous and Middle Eastern people. So more police actually means more police out there using force disproportionately on Black, Indigenous and Middle Eastern people. That's one thing. But also putting more money into policing means taking money away from the things that are proven to keep us all safer, right? What we call the social determinants of crime, so to speak. But things like housing, mental health supports, employment, like putting things into those, climate change, climate action, putting money into those things that actually keep us safer, that's our goal, is to move money away from policing into doing that. So, yeah.
In these presentations, you mentioned the use of police violence and using community resources to genuinely help people rather than, you know, persecute them. What has been the reception from the Police Services Board when you've made some of these presentations to them? Because I understand you come to them with a well-researched statistics and well-thought-out arguments. Have they been responsive to that?
Well, one thing is that, so as you correctly say, I've been speaking, I think, for about almost 2 years at the police board, almost every month. And I think they've asked me a question once. Okay, so that's one thing in terms of the responsiveness. The other thing they've done is and this is not just me, but other people who have come to speak. Part of the issue is that the board is set up so that you public delegates come to speak, but we can't ask questions. So there was complaints around that initially that came up, and the board at the time actually was trying to respond to that, but then we had the occupation in Ottawa, the so-called Freedom Convoy occupation, and as a result of that, as we know, we saw the exit of our only Black police chief, Peter Slowly, and the board at the time that was actually trying to address this issue around public participation, there basically was a coup where they got all tossed out and this new board came in. Okay, so how did that board respond? The very first act of that new board was to cancel the February 2022 meeting, which would have been the first meeting where people could come and ask questions about what happened during the convoy, right, of the police and the boards. They canceled the meeting. Then for the rest of the year, they say, and this is back in, again, February 2022, COVID restrictions were easing. They started having meetings in person, but they didn't allow virtual delegations. They would not, and we were saying, like, have hybrid meetings like every other committee is doing, and they refused. So it was requiring people to, and this was, again, COVID was easing, but still COVID was, as it is still, right? People were like, what are you forcing people to come in person? It obviously put all sorts of barriers in terms of low-income people and stuff, right? But they kept that going through most of, well, right to November of 2022. So then we did an act of civil disobedience at the November board meeting, November 2022. And the response to that was to bring even more restrictions. So they restricted public delegations to, this was in February the following year, they restricted public delegations to 1 hour, and there had never been a restriction before. They said they're going to prioritize people who haven't spoken to the board in the last 3 months, which seemed to be clearly targeting me and other activists. And they said that we had to send in our remarks in writing, in full beforehand, for approval by the chair. So that's how they responded.
Now, none of those things seem to be very democratic. They don't seem to be promoting free speech or anything like that. All those actions seem to be very undemocratic on behalf of the board. So what has your reaction been to this reaction from the board?
Yes, well, what we've done is the hub that I lead has joined with several other groups to sue the board. We brought on August the 9th, we brought a suit in Ottawa Small Claims Court against the board for violating our freedom of expression for exactly the reasons I just explained. And the board took them a while. They missed a few deadlines to file their defense, but they now have done that. And their defense is essentially saying that there's no legal obligation for them to even listen to the public. Right? So that's one thing. And they said all those restrictions I just told you about, they said they brought them, they implemented those in good faith.
You know, in terms of the board's response here, like, how does that make you feel as a citizen that they seem to not have any sense of responsibility to the public, that they don't feel they need to respond to the public? How does that make you feel?
Actually, not surprised, right? Because the board has 7 members. Okay, 3 of them are appointed by the province, right? So we have a conservative government in Ontario, so that's 3. And then 3 are city councillors, including our mayor, who campaigned on being pro police, and then 2 other councillors who have shown themselves to be very pro police, right? So we're actually not surprised, right? That the board is, as opposed to being any kind of oversight body, is acting like just a rubber stamp for whatever the police wants, right? So actually, yeah, we're not actually surprised. That's why we we're suing them.
What got you involved on this issue of policing 2 years ago? What motivated you to begin making these presentations to the Police Services Board? Could you just go a little bit more deeply into that?
Yeah, well, I think, well, I mean, it was more than 2 years ago. So here in Ottawa, in the summer of 2016, there was a Somali man, right, a black man named Abdirahman Abdi, who had mental health issues, who was beaten to death by the police, on camera, right. And then there was a trial, and the police officer who actually did the beating that was acquitted. It was so that's what really got me interested in the whole policing issue. And then again, we were actually at that point the hub. We were actually a reformist group as opposed to an abolitionist group, which we are now, right? And meaning the difference was, back then we actually thought you could reform the police and make things better. That's why we actually were one of the groups that supported bringing in our first and only black police chief, Peter Slowly, because Peter Slowly is a very smart guy. He's actually seemed committed to making some real change, and unfortunately that was his undoing, because he came in, and what we saw was that what he was doing was like basically like 80% pro cop and like 20% pro like equity, diversity, inclusion. But boy, the police, that 20%, clearly that was unacceptable. And we saw what happened to him during the occupation. What happened was that Ottawa was occupied. Peter Slowly called for 1,800 more officers. They did not appear. Until he resigned, and then suddenly they did appear, right? And it was like, oh, so you know, our view of what happened to him was that we saw his opponents inside the police and some very high up looked at the occupation and said, oh my Lord, this is a gift from God. All we have to do is ignore the Negro's instructions for 3 weeks, and blame it on him. We get rid of him, and it worked perfectly.
And since then, can you tell me a little bit about how your approach to engaging with the police has evolved? Like, what sort of is your philosophy around your tactics with engaging with the police service?
Well, as I mentioned, so that was So Peter Slowly he left in February of 2022. It was in November of 2022 that we did our act of civil disobedience, right? So that was a new move, and you know, one that like we, the idea behind, just to be clear what we did, we went into a meeting, and we were to myself and another activist. I did a delegation as I normally do, but when the chair said, all right, Mr. Brown, thank you very much, time to go, I was like, no. no, we're not going. And we have certain demands, we're not leaving, we didn't leave. And they had to adjourn that meeting, which is right. So that, what we've seen is that and obviously from what I've described so far, just going and talking to them isn't working. In fact, it's gotten to the point now where they don't even let us do that. like for the May this year, May, June, and July meetings, they essentially just banned me outright from speaking. Right? I send in my remarks and they're like, nah. So talking, if they allow us, doesn't do anything. So we're like, all right. So clearly they only respond to more militant tactics, like again, like so civil disobedience, you know, legal suits, that kind of thing. So that's hence why you're seeing us take this action now.
In terms of your experience with the Ottawa Police Services Board and the Ottawa Police, is this a problem that you feel is unique to Ottawa, or is this a problem that you think exists in other communities across Ontario or even across Canada?
Oh, no, this is definitely not unique to Ottawa. And that, I say that because I've had now experience with the Peel Police Services Board, because there's and I connected with a black activist from Peel and started looking at the Peel board and then tried to make some delegations there. And it's very similar. Although with one big difference, though, and that is that the Peel region is very diverse, right? So you have like the police chief is I think from Bangladesh, right? And there's a lot of diversity, but not black people though. Right, there's a lot of other kinds of diversity, but they're engaging in acts of anti-black racism, just like our board, right? And so they, in fact, the one time I tried to delegate there, the chair just cut me off and basically wouldn't let me finish. And then Yeah, so we're seeing very similar things. They're seeing a police board in Peel and here that instead of being an oversight body, is just completely rubber stamping, just supporting the police, and the police just keep on getting from the board one budget increase after another.
For other communities, for activists like yourself in other communities, what sort of advice would you give them on how to engage effectively with their police services board and their police service if they're experiencing some of the pushback that you've experienced?
Like any advice, certainly if what you're doing isn't working, try something different. And that's what we're doing. We're still this is a bit of an experiment, right? We've never sued the board before, so we will certainly share what happens, right? We certainly hope that the lawsuit will be successful, because it's like all we're asking for is for them to remove the restrictions on public delegations, right? So it's a pretty easy ask, right? But yeah, so I'd say the bottom line though is that if what you're doing is not working, if you're just going to your board and talking to them and they're just nodding nicely, and then they keep on giving the police huge increases, you got to try something more, not just different, but something more militant, right? So that again, whether it's legal action or civil disobedience, that'll depend on the local context. But that's the way we're going. And I gotta say, like that act of civil disobedience, we got more media coverage on that than almost anything else we've done. So, any activists out there listening, just saying, right?
Yeah, get in touch with your local media, especially allies in media who want to help and support. And you talked earlier, Robin, about wanting to see resources diverted away from the police service into other community support services. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, what does good community policing look like?
Well, actually, just to be clear, I'm certainly not, I'm glad you used that term. I'm not talking about community policing, because that's what the police talk about here. Community policing. In fact, here's an example of that, right? So they in Ottawa, they have what are called the Ottawa Police has what's called neighborhood resource teams, right? Which is the latest version of community policing. That community policing the idea is that, police will go into communities and build relationships with people, and that'll be, and it's like that doesn't work because it doesn't address the social determinants of crime, right? Right. So what I'm talking about is actually we have a really relevant example of this, like very relevant. In fact, today is what, Wednesday? So Monday, the Ottawa Police Board approved, as they always do. This time, they approved about 200 grand for the Ottawa Police to go and lease a space in what's called the Bywood Market, like a downtown area, for a new police station. Well, right, and this is an area with a lot of low-income people, a lot of drug use, that kind of thing, issues like, right? And so the idea is putting a police station in there is going to address that. But this area of Ottawa, the Bywood Market, has been heavily policed for years, right? And the police tell us, right, they're telling, oh, crime's, all this crime, it's not affecting the crime rate, right? So what we're saying is what you need to be putting money into. And actually, I've learned now, this is actually one of the reasons that the hub is going to be turning, at least part of our attention away from policing and into these things I'm talking about. One of the biggest ones is housing. Okay, housing is key, right? Housing, in terms of the opioid, it's linked to everything, right? Right. So, and the currently the Ottawa's affordable housing budget is $15 million. The police budget is $400 million. And their dry cleaning budget for this year is $500,000. Okay, so they're out there using force on disproportionately on Black, Indigenous, I mean, listen, people, looking really good while doing it.
Unbelievable. Well, Robin, before I wind down the interview, I just wanted to ask, is there anything else that you might want to add here that I haven't asked you yet?
In terms of the Black community, okay, there's we're certainly not a monolith, right? So the one thing we've noticed is that, similar to the larger community, there's actually a large chunk of the Black community that is basically reformist, right? Like they actually believe in the idea of policing, right? Kind of fundamentally, it's solid. But you get some reforms, right? You get have more Black officers, more training. That'll solve the problem. And the issue with that is that, again, the people who think that, it's not evidence-based at all, right? And when we go talk to those people and say, all right, you want to have more Black officers, what, like, how many? Like how many and where do they need to be in the hierarchy, and when what methods do you have to what goals do you have, first of all, like concretely, what methods do you have to hold the police accountable? They have no answers to those questions. Right. So there's, and this is what we call the result of like massive amounts of propaganda, right? That people just believe that policing is a good thing, and you gotta maybe tweak it here, tweak it there, but you gotta have it, and it's good, it's fundamentally good, right? When it's absolutely not, right? It's actually causing harm. That's what it does, right? Because its fundamental goal is to control marginalized communities to protect the powerful. that's what police do, right? So.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Robin. And before I let you go, if a listener wants to learn more about the 613-819 Hub, is there a website that they can go visit?
Well, you know, normally there is, but we're in a transition period right now. But I'll give you the it's if you Google the 613-819 Blog Hub, we have a website right now. We're actually transitioning the website from one provider to another, so it's down, and unfortunately, it's been down. But we will get it back up, so that's where you can find us.
Right. Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Robin, for joining me today and sharing this important news and information with us and our listeners. Thank you so much.
No problem. Yeah. Take care, man.
Robin Brown in conversation with Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Thanks so much for that, Robin and Nick. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. For that, let's turn it back over to Rabble's editor Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. In national politics, new Speaker of the House of Commons Greg Fergus faced backlash on his first day on the job. Fergus attempted to make a statement to the House prior to question period, but conservatives tried to shut him down before they even knew what he was going to say. Conservatives began citing House rules to the Speaker to try and prevent him from speaking further, but Fergus cited his own rules as well as precedent for the Speaker to make short statements prior to question period. In the end, Fergus made his statement, which was a simple plea to his fellow MPs to help ensure the dignity and decorum of the House of Commons. Staying in national politics, Canadians' concerns grow in regard to the ongoing crisis in the Middle East as the war between Israel and Hamas enters its fourth week. 23 federal Liberal MPs have added their voices to an open letter to the Prime Minister, which echoes the federal New Democrats' call for an immediate ceasefire. In addition to calling for a ceasefire, the letter also is calling on Hamas to release all hostages in their custody and for the protection of all civilians. These MPs are joining other groups, including non-governmental organizations, as well as individual Canadians, who are calling on the government to play the role of peacekeeper in the current crisis. In provincial news, NDP members are reacting to the eviction of Ontario NDP MPP Sarah Jama from the Ontario NDP caucus earlier this week. Jama had made a statement earlier in October calling for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas and denounced Israel's treatment of Palestinian civilians. Federal NDP MP Matthew Green was one NDP leader who criticized the decision to remove Jama from caucus, as did Jama's fellow NDP MPP, Jill Andrew, who said that she was not consulted on the decision prior to it being announced. Andrew criticized Ontario NDP leader Maritz Stiles for the statement she issued after expelling Jama from caucus, saying, quote, "The release went on to conjure what I feel were stereotypical tropes often used to communicate about Black people, especially Black women, who are perceived as difficult," end quote. In Alberta politics, federal conservative leader Pierre Poilievre offered weak criticism of Alberta Premier Danielle Smith's scheme to remove her province from the Canada Pension Plan. Smith has suggested that if her province, which makes up 16% of the population of Canada, leaves the Canada Pension Plan, that it should be entitled to 53% of the plan's $570 billion worth of assets. Pierre Poilievre stated that he believed that Alberta should stay within the Canada Pension Plan. Poilievre argued that Alberta was only trying to leave the Canada Pension Plan because Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was allegedly attacking their provincial economy. And finally, in labor news, Unifor, which is representing striking workers with the St. Lawrence Seaway Management Corporation, has agreed for a call for mediation between them and their employer. Since the strike began, no commercial cargo has been traveling through the 300-kilometer St. Lawrence Seaway, which stretches from Montreal to Lake Erie and sees $16.7 billion worth of cargo travel through it every year. The union is seeking better wages for the approximately 360 employees who operate this vital economic artery. In environmental news, David Suzuki is reminding us that the climate crisis won't go away by simply ignoring it. The amount of carbon in the atmosphere continues to grow, global temperatures continue to rise, and this summer saw over 100 square kilometers of Canada's forests burn. All of this is before even mentioning the significant loss of biodiversity this planet is experiencing, especially in its oceans. Suzuki is reminding the public that we must continue to push for change, saying, quote, "It's up to each of us to do what we can, whether it's making changes in our lives and habits, joining with others to protest and push for political change, calling out the lies and propaganda, talking to friends and family, or voting for those who make our survival a priority," end quote. To read the full version of all the stories we talked about today, please visit rabble.ca.
Rabble.ca shares news for the rest of us. We believe news for the rest of us is about creating a more informed and connected world. Help Rabble.ca make quality, progressive news and views accessible to all. Become a Rabble Rouser today and support us during our summer fundraiser with a one-time or monthly donation.
And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
folks.